Sure. Let's go ahead and get started because we want to be, you know, favorable of your time and everything. I'm Rick. Rick Kemp, come on over. We've got the North Carolina group and me. So anyway, it's good to have y'all here today. I appreciate you coming in because without you, I'd have been here by myself. And so, but as you see, it's creative and intentional evangelism. And I want us to kind of walk through some of this. And if this flickers, I apologize. It's something about these seaports and the connectors that we have to go through for the HDMI. But here's what we want to do. We're going to talk about creative evangelism, a contextual ministry partnership between the association and churches. And by the way, when we get through, if you want this PowerPoint, if you want my full notes, then at the end there's a QR code. All you have to do is pull up the QR code. It'll get you my contact info. Just send me an email and I'll shoot it off to you. So that way you won't have to worry about as much notes. You can eat your M&Ms, your Nutty Bar, your whatever you got, Raisinets or whatever is out there. But let's open up with a word of prayer and I'll kind of walk through and tell you how I come about on this one. Father, thank you so much for just the joy of being here together. I thank you for these four leaders that are here from North Carolina. As we are walking through this material, I ask God that you would just help me to communicate my heart and help us to see how this might be able to be encouraging and useful in other settings. And God, just guide us through this time. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, as we look at it, here's what I want you to see. Here's what the purpose is going to look like. The purpose of this breakout is really threefold. And it just went away. I think I bumped it there. Let's see if we can get it. There we go. Identify and meet key needs in your footprint. Okay? What are the needs that are going on in your area? Okay? Secondly, once you know what the needs are, assess the depth of the need and then strategically begin to develop a purpose, a plan, and a partnership to make that happen. Implement it. Okay? Your end goal that we want to see from this is the connection of the person that you're ministering to, engaged into the local church, and coming to be in discipleship and a disciple within that context. Okay, I am so sorry that this thing keeps doing that. So let's see if we can get it to maybe work through it and stay with it. I'll try and stay a little farther away from it and see what we can do. And if it will work, okay? Back in the mid-2000s, almost 20 years ago, I was working on my doctorate at New Orleans. And there was a class that I was looking at. Hey, come on in. Glad you're here. Are you from North Carolina?
No.
Okay, well, this group is all North Carolina, so you'll need to find a different table, you know. You're the newest Florida guy. What part of Florida?
Central Florida.
Central?
Yeah, right between Tampa and Orlando, right in the middle of the state.
Let me guess. Lakeland?
Nope, a little north.
Little north.
Yeah,
Claremont. Been there, done that. I was outside of Tampa myself back in the 90s. I was serving at...
Know it now.
Oh, I'm sure.
You go I-4 to I-4. It's
everything.
Is there any place where there's pasture land or orange groves?
Well, see, that's what we had. I was on staff at First Baptist Dover.
Okay.
And we had a bunch of citrus and berry farmers.
They do the Sunday school thing there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go there now?
Nothing.
And
wow.
Even though that's still sort of rural, that's getting built up. But Claremont, man. Claremont and Mineola are the same city.
Wow. That's crazy.
Lake County last year doubled.
Yeah.
And there's developments everywhere.
Crazy.
And you can't, I mean, we got churches saying, what are we going to do to reach people? Like, walk outside.
Just walk outside because they are there.
You've got triple the number of people in your community than you did 2 months ago.
There you go. Well, here's where we are. We just kind of talked about, and let me bring it back up for you, Tim. You go by Tim or Timothy?
Tim.
All right. Tim, what we're wanting to do is we're going to identify needs in your footprint, your area, develop a plan of how you can go in there and meet those needs, and then partnering with the local church, and then the end goal is going to have that person that you've ministered to get involved in the local church. Okay? Now, here's something I want us to really concentrate on here. Contextual. Okay? When we've studied in, you know, in seminary, they talked about, look at the context of the passage. What is the verse saying as a whole with the chapter, with the section, with the book as a whole to the people that are there? Well, you have to do the same thing in meeting needs. Here's where I've come to, and I'm challenging our association, and I'm a Shelby Baptist Association right there. That's my cell and email, but at the end, I'm going to have a QR code. You can download all this. If you'll email me, I'll send you the PowerPoint and my notes. So, here's what I'm looking at, okay? In our association, I'm trying to get our association to come to this understanding that who we are is that we are like Jason Allen says at Midwestern, we're for the church, okay? I feel like that the association is for the church. But there's another part of that. You go one step farther than what Jason Allen is saying for Midwestern. We're not just for the church, but we are to be with the church, walking with them through the process, boots on the ground. So that's kind of how we were. And as I was just about to lead into this, in the mid-2000s, I was working on my doctorate at New Orleans. Had opportunity, that where you went to? Alright. Had opportunity to go, was invited by our state evangelism department to go on a project trip to kind of look and see what was going on at First Baptist Church of Leesburg with Charles Roselle. Okay? Charles Roselle went to that church and in 1985 had a vision. They were just running a few hundred, maybe 200. Yeah. Had a
membership.
It was just nothing. I mean, it was a good sized church, but not to be able to pull off the vision that he had. He wanted to build a ministry center to go alongside with the needs of the community. And so that's what he did. And I went on that trip. And ever since that, I began to have this passion and desire to be able to do something similar in our setting. So I was pastoring a church that I had planted. And we were running at that time about what he started out running. I thought, why can't we do that here in Mobile? Well, you know, we were still trying to get everything established as a church plant. We didn't have some of the funding that he had in the beginning with established older members. So it was kind of a tough thing. But I moved there and I went to a historical downtown church. They had a building next door that was being unused. Needed to be renovated. It was the old library for the city that they had acquired. And I thought, what a great opportunity. And I saw needs in the community. We started thinking about that. Never happened. Then I moved to another church a few years later, and I thought, well, maybe here's where we can get that going. Never did it materialize in the local church. But when I went to the Shelby Baptist Association, and by the way, you guys have probably been serving, except for Tim, your name?
Jason.
Jason's been there since COVID?
No, it started just in January.
Oh, this January?
Yeah.
Who was there at COVID? Oh, you were there at COVID. Okay.
I started at COVID too.
Well, it was all y'all's fault. We had COVID there. Now, and then David is actually a stand-in for their AMS. So here's the thing. Many of us are either just getting started or have only been in there a few years. Here's where I got to. When I got to the Shelby Baptist Association in June of 21, I began to see really some amazing things that were already in place that were doing exactly what I had been thinking about and dreaming of, had some funding mechanisms to help it, because our association, I don't know what size you're in, we've got 62 churches and we've got 3 that we are bringing in under watch care this year. So basically 65 churches. And that's a good size association, but a lot of times funding is not always there. So I started with a little bit already there because we had some funding in line, and I'll share more about that as we go along. But here's where I want us to begin. We're going to walk through about four different areas that I want us to think about in doing evangelism intentionally, creatively, and contextually. Okay? We good for that? All right, here's what I'd like to do. By the way, I've also had opportunity to be involved that has increased that desire by going to what is now one of the Send Relief Centers for South Dakota. There is a Send Relief Center there now on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Any of y'all ever heard of that reservation? Okay. Here's the interesting dynamic about that reservation. I can say one phrase and you'll go, really? And you'll know it. The Battle of Wounded Knee. It's where the Battle of Wounded Knee was. Sitting Bull was killed there. So everything about that is in our name, understanding, but as Americans, but we don't know a lot about it, really. But it's one of the poorest areas in our nation. I went out there in 2015 to see what was going on because I've been doing Bike Week. I'm going to Sturgis and ministering there. But I thought, you know, we got some church members that might be interested in doing some other type of ministry that would never go to Sturgis, but that do this. So I reached out and found out about a ministry that had just gotten started out there called the Chanku Washte Ranch. And that's called, that means the good road in the bad lands. And we did summer camps. Then it morphed into compassion ministry through optometry and dental. And then it morphed into, hey, wait a minute. We need to do this more than once a year. We need to build a optometry and dental center or wellness center on the res. And we're like, but we don't have the funding. So fortunately, I was able to have been a trustee here for 8 years. And I just called up Kevin. I said, Kevin, let's have lunch. I want to talk with you and Carlos. Carlos, the CFO. And he said, okay. We sat down and I pitched it to him. And when I did pitch it to him, he said, well, that sounds very interesting. I said, he said, let me do a little research. You know, when we have a vision and we lay it before God, God is able to do, according to Ephesians 3:20, immeasurably more than we could ever ask or imagine. And that's what happened. Our little vision morphed from just building a wellness center to now it is a Send Relief Center in South Dakota. And Matt is a fully funded missionary with the North American Mission Board. There is a chaplain out there. They've got other resources and funding that's coming in to help them reach the people on the reservation, which is less than 1.5% converted salvation. So it's really an unreached people group. So that's kind of how I got all into all this creative evangelism, and I want us to walk through that and see if we can help. And I'm going to see if I can get this to do what we need it to, because I really want you. Let's talk about the biblical foundation in this thing, okay? The biblical foundation. There are several passages of Scripture that I want us to look at in just a moment, but if you really think through it, the issue is that we find biblical models that Jesus gave to us. When He would go out and perform a miracle, it wasn't just so that He could meet a physical need. He was doing that. He was concerned with that. But He had a deeper intention in mind. The Scriptures that will show us that tell us that. For instance, Jesus performed many miracles, ministries, not just for the intention of developing a social ministry, but He wanted to open the door to meet a deeper need. And I guarantee you that your churches and you, really, for the most part, that's what you want to do. You don't want to just feed the hungry, though that's important. You don't want to just clothe the ones that don't have anything. You don't want to just help the family that their home was destroyed by a hurricane, tornado, fire, or flood. You want to do something that's going to transcend the temporal to the eternal. Well, what we find is as we look at that, you look at Jesus, first miracle. What did he do? Turn the water into wine. His mother prompted him in there to do that. But look what he said there in John chapter 2, verse 11. He said, "This has been done and has manifested his glory, establishing the ministry." What was his ministry? To seek and to save the lost, to bring salvation to them. So we find that. The second thing that, another one that we find is, Jesus heals the official's son. When he did that, if you look at that verse, John 4:53, it says, "And he himself believed, he and all his household." Who is that? The official. Jesus performed a miracle, healed his son, the leader of the house, and the whole household. Their eternal destiny was changed by that miracle. So we keep going. We find that not only that, here's another one. The mighty catch. You know, I took my son fly fishing in the Smoky Mountains just a few weeks ago. It's been a bucket list of mine. I wanted to go fly fishing because I'd never done it. And you know, here's the weird thing. I'm not even a fisherman. I'm not a big fisherman. I don't like to go out to the lake and just throw a fish and do that. But for some reason, something about fly fishing was just mystique. It was a mystique that I wanted to do. So I took my son, he's 25, we went up there and we did it. Here's what I found interesting. We would go and we would cast into this little area, and we would cast about 11 times, and if nothing was there, we'd move on. I could handle that. I didn't want to sit in one spot and just do it all day long. I wanted to move and do that. Well, can you imagine the disciples when they were there fishing, and before they were disciples, fishing, nothing, and Jesus said, "Hey, you ain't caught anything? Why don't you cast it on the other side?" What, how would you feel if you were in that boat and somebody that you didn't know walked up and said, "Hey, you know what? You'd do better if you cast on the other side of the boat." What would your response be? To me, I'd be, "Yeah, right. You know, thank you. I appreciate your help. But you know what? I don't know who you are. Just keep on moving." Being a smart aleck. The irony of it is, and when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. Because Jesus told them one little thing, they followed through. Their eternal destiny was changed. Let's look at one other. I think I saw one other. Healing of the leper. Luke 5:15. We know that the leper, they came and they were rejoicing. But one came back and says, "Now even more about the report about him went abroad, and great crowds gathered to hear him and to be healed of their infirmities." So what we're finding here is that Jesus, his biblical application in everything was not for his own self. Well, there was the feeding of the 5,000. But here's the biblical application. And if it'll come up, assistance ministry needs a gospel engagement. You think that? Think about that for just a moment. Assistance in ministry needs a gospel engagement. What does that mean? In what, in your context, in your mind, what would that mean?
I guess it's the difference between social agency and evangelism.
Okay. You're hitting right on target. Okay. Socialism and the gospel ministry are two different things. Now, the Bible does talk about social ministry. Displaying love, mercy, giving unto those in need, the least of these. But without the gospel presentation, in fact, look at this. Let's see if we can pull it up. Gospel engagements, they're going to look different in every location. I'll pull that up in just a minute. But what is a benevolence act without the gospel conversation? You hit on it, Tim. You said it's a social act. Look at this. It is loving and obedient acts, but it is not evangelism. And it cannot replace it. And what does it say? It is a social gospel and acts on the temporal without addressing the eternal. And what is our whole purpose? We have been made fishers of men to make disciples. The last command that we are given is, you will receive power to go out and what? make disciples. So as we see that, that's kind of where we are. Now, let's go back to this one thought. Gospel engagements will look different in every context. Okay? We're going to talk about contextual environments in just a few moments, but we've got four here that are from North Carolina. We got one from Florida.
Yeah, I was a member of Leesburg. So.
Yeah, there you go. And I am from Alabama. I've lived in Florida, never lived in North Carolina. I've visited there. It's nice. Got friends that live there. And I've lived in different places. Now, just curious, you're in a growing, more like a suburbia.
Yeah, we're a bedroom community of Orlando.
Okay, so that's exact. And we're a lot of bedroom communities of Birmingham. What about you? You're
Burlington, Alamance County, 126,000.
Okay, what about you?
Rural.
Okay.
Very rural.
Rural, but social growing areas.
Okay. It's ironic you say that because y'all are saying rural and there's some growing areas. You would think that you would think that Birmingham bedrooms would not be, but we've got some very rural, just like you've probably got some horse farms around. We've got horse farms. We've got guys that still grow some produce and things around, but it's very interesting, and we're going to talk about that in the gospel conversations will look different. But let's talk about this, associational purposes. Here's the things that we have to hold on to and understand. This first thing, we're not the church. What's the difference in the church and the association? Any thoughts?
I tell people we're the closest denominational entity to them.
Okay.
What that makes us is an influence of all things Southern Baptist. And sometimes I say we're kind of like the doctrine police.
Okay. You know, that was part of the concerns I had with the law amendment. Who would be the enforcers of it? Okay. We would. And that concerned me greatly. Didn't mean I did not that I disagreed with some of the principles in case, but are we to be the police? Is that our only purpose? You know, we are not the church. We are an association, a network of churches, and would walk alongside with them on that. So what we are, we've never been charged to be the church, but here's what we are. Okay, I'm going to give you an overview of our association. Okay? This is not saying that our association is better than your association or yours is better than ours. We're different. I really feel like SBA is an anomaly, and you'll find out why here in just a few moments. Tell you what, let's do it this way. What would you think an association of 65 churches in a community or a county, Shelby County, that is 225 to 230,000 people. It's the most affluent county in our state. That's not saying a whole lot because it is Alabama, okay? Y'all can just go ahead and laugh. I'd made the joke, all right? But it is the most affluent in Alabama. What would you think that we have as far as number of staff members?
Number of what?
Staff that I have in the association.
How many churches you have?
65.
I'd say two or three.
Okay.
One.
Okay. You guys have anything?
At least two or three.
Okay.
I'll say three.
Three? All right. What are you about to say? Okay. We have seven full-time, four part-time in our office. Then we have an additional five full-time and roughly 20 to 25 at different times part-time at one of our entities. So basically we are pushing 50 and we're trying to fight going over 50 employees total. And you might think, how in the world, why in the world do you have that many people? Let's walk through and you'll see. All right. By the way, have you ever heard in some of your larger churches that, well, we don't need the association?
Yes.
What's your response to them?
We don't need you either.
I didn't say, what do you want to say? What do we say? What's your response? How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, it's the truth. In some instances, I mean, they're kind of, I think in many instances, it's probably because previously there was no association, and so out of necessity, they did what they needed to do.
Okay.
I just ask them, well, if you do work with us, we can get a lot more done together.
There's a lot of truth in that. Yeah. I mean, why was the cooperative program begun in 1925? Because we're better together. Jesus, when he sends out the disciples, they go out and they go out to serve, but they're a part of a greater network. Okay? I've had some churches that have, they've not directly said it, but that's kind of how they operate and then their mindset. But the reality of it is, if they ever start in their mind thinking that, then they've begun to think that they are better than what God intended in reality. And the truth is that they may not need the association, but the association does need them. Not just for finances. They need them to help with some of the smaller churches. And one of our goals this year is we want to partner three of our healthy churches with three of our struggling churches in revitalization projects. So there is that need. There is the opportunity that, I don't know about you guys, but we are struggling in a lot of times, even with a Baptist university just 30 minutes away from us, that is one of the premier Baptist universities in our state, if not in our nation. And we're struggling to find people that can lead worship in our small churches. People that can do student ministry in our small churches. People that can lead children in our small churches. Now, bivocational pastors, we're doing pretty good right now, but the state as a whole has struggled with them, and we've made an emphasis on that. So here's what we need to come into light. Here's where we are as the SBA. Our mission statement says this. We exist to make disciples by meeting needs in partnership with our member churches. Okay? Making disciples by meeting needs in partnership with our local churches or partner churches. We have four core values. And one of them, Dr. Groza mentioned this morning. But first of all, and first and foremost, Christ. We are Christ-centered. Anyone we hire, I go over these with them. In fact, I had an interview Tuesday morning for someone for one of our part-time positions. And I said, we're Christ-centered. Okay? And what that means is we're going to carry the character of Christ, not just at work, but even when we're out and about and around and wherever we are. And we're going to have compassion on everyone that we can engage and partner with and serve. And we're going to do it in cooperation because cooperation is the biblical way. And we are called to do that. So those are our core values, but then we operate out of these four buckets. Okay? First of all, and these are not mine. I adopted three of them from guys in our areas that have been using them for several years. And then I added in a fourth one myself, and then some other guys are using that one as well now. But we are here to encourage you. COVID, both of you, right? How many of your pastors hung in there after COVID? Did you lose any of them?
I don't think so.
I did. I was not there at COVID.
I did lose one.
But when I came back, or when I came there, COVID had just wrapped up in June of 21, and we had a church plant, never made it. as a result of it. Actually, two church plants never made it. They were trying to plant right before COVID, never made it. Neither one of those are in our area serving at churches or that I know of at all now. How many of your pastors really struggled, and even some of them to the degree, and you still hear this comment, we're not back where we were pre-COVID?
Hear that a lot.
Either numerically or financially or just ministerially. I hear that a lot. We're not back where we were pre-COVID. I've got some that are saying, man, we are just now getting back to the same numbers we had before COVID. And it's kind of amazing because I track several things in our association, and I try to do it pre-COVID, current, and then the last 2 years, and then a 10-year overall thing. And you know what I found to be interesting is I went through just in June all the data for us, and the only number that we were in the positive was our financial giving was positive about $60,000 of where it was pre-COVID. That was it. Attendance was down. Baptisms were down. Everything was down. Okay.
I've had a couple of pastors say it kind of weeded out some of the stragglers.
Yeah, I've heard that too, and that's good. Yeah. That's a good statement. But the reality of it is, they're still gone, and we've lost them. And here's the reality of it. I hear a lot of this. We need to focus more energy on reaching those who have not been here than on trying to reclaim those who don't want to come anymore. And now, part of me gets it, and part of me, it still burns and hurts. So we want to encourage them. In fact, I say to our pastors, we're here to encourage you because ministry can be tough. Especially when we are basically living in a post-Christian world. Okay? I hate to say it that way, but when you look around at everything that's going on, that's kind of where we are. So here's what I want you to see is, here's how we encourage. I make regular contacts. Alright? How do I make contacts? I have every one of our pastors in a spreadsheet. Okay? And I have them in 4 weeks, in 4 days. And in those 4 weeks and 4 days, I go through every one of our pastors, sending them a personal contact text, not a broadcast. A broadcast is a general for everybody. This is a personal one where I go in, I say, hey, Tim, just wanted to check and see how things are going, and I'll name his church. How are you, and I'll name his wife, doing right now? Are there any matters I can pray for you about? Would you believe that I've been doing that since I come, and that has bought so much credibility? Where pastors who had actually, we had two pastors that wanted nothing to do with the association, who now, one of them is responding on a decent, okay basis. One of them has actually texted me on his own without me having to text him. And so I'm building those relationships or those contacts. I've also got our staff member. I've got them broken down into four groups, and four of our full-time ministerial staff, they get a group each month so that every pastor gets a contact twice from us in our office every month. Then I handwrite a card for the pastor's birthday, his wife's birthday, and their anniversary, and put a $10 Chick-fil-A gift card in there. Doesn't cost me a lot, doesn't take a lot of time, but it buys a lot of dividends. When you remember the pastor's wife, it's just that personal contact. I'm visiting every church that I can't get in them every year because of the amount that we have, but I am in every church on Sundays and making that. So contacts, that's one way. And by the way, if you got questions, feel free to ask. I'll be glad to. Those visits, I mentioned those. My goal was to visit every church within the year that I was there. first year I was there. I didn't quite get there because of speaking engagements and people needing me to do things, but I did make it within about a year and a half. And then those that I made on Wednesday nights, I made them a target to go back on a Sunday right after that so that I could get in all of them. Couples retreat. If you were in the auditorium when I introduced Tim Dowdy, I mentioned the Refresh Retreat, the Ministry Couples Retreat. Here's what we do. That retreat, it's a 3-day, 2-night getaway. We go to the one here at Lake Oconee in Georgia at the Ritz-Carlton, and we actually have a organization that helps us with some funds, and we pay for the pastor and his wife to go. $500 per couple. And we'll, last year, I think we took 15 couples. And then when they go, they'll get all this time together. They'll get all the worship time. They'll get the speaking. They'll get great food. They'll get great accommodations. They'll get swag from NAM. But we also give them some swag and love on them from SBA. Just a way of encouraging them. Next. Night of Appreciation. This last year we had Jeff Orge come in and speak. We fed him and had a competition. I have two pastors that do competition grilling. I had one do brisket and one do chicken. And there was and then at the end we gave them these goofy awards that one of them was a rubber chicken plaque and said best chicken, and another one was a cow that says holy cow, this is great brisket or something like that. Just fun things, night of appreciation. There are other things that we do, but let's move on. We want to equip them. I do consulting, go in and look at the church and help them out if there are areas that they might need. Pastors call me, hey, I need some help with this situation. Would you believe I had two pastors in the last week call and said, we need to exercise church discipline. I need some advice. Literacy, we do English as a second language in our churches. Revitalization, replanting, we have a contract labor with a guy that is a practitioner. He comes in and does revitalization coaching. I pay him maybe $800 per church, and he is investing in them for 3 months, meeting with them every week, every month, going over and helping them and laying out a strategy for them. Replanting. We've got a church right now that's replanting. It was dead. One of our other churches came in and said, hey, we want to help. We'll help and partner with them. And they have not only sent over people to work with them, 30 church members, but they sent two staff members. They committed the first $1 million of a capital fundraising campaign to help that church to refurbish their property, and they are in the process now. They've gone from about 25 on their anniversary, 1 year anniversary this past June, they had 111. So exciting things. One-day trainings. We'll have a one-day training. I'll bring in different people to speak on different topics, and the pastors, they'll come there from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. They'll get breakfast and lunch, and they'll get 3 sessions of training. This year, we're partnering with one of our churches. They wanted to partner with us, bringing in H.B. Charles to be our trainer on Sunday. DR training, disaster relief. A lot of areas do that. Hey, Rick, come on in. You got something to add to this conversation, or...
I got nothing to add.
Here's where we are. We're talking about ways in equipping. One of the biggest ways that I've tried to learn is listening. Rick, why is listening so important for the AMS?
Huh? Well, I'm coming in cold. I don't even know what you're talking about. But if you're not listening as an AMS, you are not availing yourself to the pulse of your churches. And by listening, I'm a big advocate of listening sessions in the association, because if I've got 20 churches and in listening sessions I find out that 12 of them all have something dear to their heart, that sets a direction for me as an association, how I can empower them and help them on that path. Sometimes I think the association takes on strategic items that the churches could care less about. And we spin wheels.
What would a listening session look like?
So what I used to do in my association, granted I haven't been an associational missionary in 14 years now, but in my day, I would, and you have to hold to it, I would say, I'm going to hear, look, this is the topic we're talking about, and I want to hear from you, and I will not respond. I mean, when I say listening session, it's silence. I don't say a thing. Even if they ask me a direct question, I'll say a thing. I said, I'm just listening because I want to hear their heart. We have a subject matter of where, you know, whether that be where we need to go, or you're talking about evangelism or what. You pose two or three great questions and you let the room talk. You let them say what they need to say to you. They're especially important if you're a new AMS, because you're setting a tone that you're going to listen before speaking. And I think that
could
be valuable. I don't know.
What it's perfect. That's right on target. Listening to what they're going through, listening to their needs, listening to their hurts, not just for the church, but for them. You know, I've had some pastors. I had a pastor that walked in to my office, probably October of 23. And he was like, do you know any other ministry positions besides pastor that are open that I could possibly get some work to help support me, because I'm about to step away? Here's why he was about to step away. I came on board on June 7th of 2021. I was in the office for 1 week. I left and went to Nashville for the SBC convention. Went to SB Cal, learned about all that. Tuesday morning, I get up and I head over to the convention center, and I get a call from our office. And one of our pastor's son committed suicide that previous night. And this was him. And he said, I can't take it anymore. I'm hurting. I feel like I'm spinning my wheels, and I need a break. I said, before you make a huge decision about walking away from a church that loves you, I said, let me walk in there and talk with your leaders and broker you a sabbatical. And so we did a sabbatical for him. And here's the thing. When I sat down and met with the deacons, every one of them was unanimously like, absolutely, we're going to do everything we can to take care of our pastor. And they sent him on a sabbatical, and we laid it out, and they not only did that, they honored it, didn't hound him with stuff, but they did check on him through one person. You see, those listening sessions are more than just what's going on in the church. What's going on with the pastor, with his wife? Because they're hurting. That's why the number one thing I said was that we do is we encourage. You never know what's going on behind the doors. Secondly, we want to equip. Thirdly is the empower. And empower, I want to ask this question of you guys. What percentage of your churches run less than 100? Do you know?
100%.
100%? Okay. You got that number down. All right. What about you?
The vast majority.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
90%.
90%? Okay.
75%.
75% of our churches run less than 100. Roughly 48 or so percent, I believe it is, run less than 50. And 30 or so, you know, run less than 30. When you add it all up, that might not seem like it adds up, but that's kind of where we are. Here's what I have found. Those churches that are running less than 100, which is 75% of our association, they want to serve the community. They want to be gospelly engaged, a lot of them, but they don't have the resources. So what we want to do is help them by empowering them with the resources to do the ministry. We want to help them find the ways to do the ministry. So we have a hunger ministry. We have a food pantry at our ministry center, in which the pantry itself is probably the size of this room from here back. Okay? That's one section of it. Behind me, we've got a walk-in freezer, a refrigerator, a walk-in freezer. Then another room, we've got a walk-in freezer and refrigerator that's probably the size of from here to the end of this, that wall. Then we've got a mobile food pantry that we take and set up at our churches to feed. The reason we set that up is because we would have people come to the ministry center. Then they would say, hey, we don't have enough gas to get home. Can we get some gas money? And we wanted to be able to connect with where the needs are, but we also wanted to connect those who got the resources with the local church. So we started setting up our mobile food pantry in partnership with our local church, training them to not only give out the food, but have gospel conversations. Okay, so we have that. We've got a 20-foot trailer that's got a, it's got two freezers in it. It's got stacks in the back of canned goods and goods that are, you know, non-perishable. Then we load it up on the front end with our breads and things that come in. We pick up from Publix, Walmart, the food bank, and I think we've got a couple of Piggly Wiggly, if you've ever heard of Piggly Wiggly. Sock and Shoe Ministry. We have a binder this big that is Sock and Shoe Ministry. I'm getting confused here. Sock and Shoe Ministry. Upstairs, we have every kind of shoe you could imagine in a size of tennis shoes. And we've got a partnership with Bomba where we get their socks. Okay? They send us socks. We will give out those shoes through two avenues. School counselors or principals call us. A church referral kind of fits in that as well. Or any of our foster kids that we have partnerships with, organizations that have foster kids. That's who gets the socks and shoes. And by the way, the shoes, they're not going to be the Dollar General specials. They're going to get Nike. They're going to get OnCloud. They're going to get New Balance or Adidas. So that when they walk into the schools, they're not labeled as, oh, those are hand-me-downs. Those are freebies. Those are something that would be embarrassing to the kids. And we do all this through funds. And I'll talk about how we fund it in just a minute. Benevolent Compassion Ministries. That is where we help those who their homes have burned. They're trying to start over. Something happened, and we give them from our thrift store. We have a thrift store. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. But we give them a furniture, clothing, all for free. They have to go through our ministry and get set up for that. Mobile deli bread shop I talked about. School supplies. Here's where I was going. We have a binder that's this thick. And in that binder, we've got a list of every school, every grade, every what a child would have to have to go for that school. Every one of the schools in our county system, we have that. Then we've got a whole resource room that's full of paper, pencils, calculators, wipes, hand sanitizer. Everything that was going to be on those lists is in there. Teachers call and say, hey, we've got a student here, doesn't have anything. Not a problem. We'll package it up and get it to them, and they share it with them. Okay? Mobile dental assistance. We have our own mobile dental. Florida has one with the state convention. North Carolina has three. The third one's on its way if it's not already on the ground. Chrissy Watson is your contact there. Chrissy is phenomenal. Okay? She and I have become really good friends over the years, and she's helped us when we met at a, of all things, Mobile Healthcare Association, which is as secular as they come, but we ended up meeting there and we've been able to partner together, and she's been a great resource for me, and she says I've helped her some too, but I don't know about that. So I'm going to show you some pictures of that in just a moment, our dental unit. Engage. We want to engage our churches in partnerships through disaster relief, just like many of you, through a thing we do called Christmas Gift Shop. It's exactly what it says. It's a Christmas gift shop where parents come and shop for their children for Christmas, but to get to shop there, you have to go through an interview. There has to be a significant need. Then you come without the child. You shop and take it around. You go to an age-appropriate, gender-appropriate room for your child. You get to select three items from a different tier section, and you get those items, and then they will wrap them. In addition to that, in the interview process, we found out what size clothing and what clothes they need for the children. For the teenage years, they get a gift card to Kohl's, and then they will get a stocking that is just slammed full of about $75 worth of just goodies that would go in a stocking. And then they get a tin of popcorn and a tin of those sugar cookies sugar bread cookies or whatever. And then they get a gift for the child to give the parent, mom, and one for the dad. And then while everything's being wrapped, a chaplain is talking with them and sharing the gospel. That's our Christmas gift shop. We will see, last year we saw 500 children receive Christmas. Of those 500 children, their parents that came through, I think it represented close to 275 families. And last year we had about 16 or 18 professions of faith. The year before that was more. We had, I think, 37 professions of faith. So that's kind of how we do that. Engaging with Unite. Unite is World Changers for our county. We do it, and we have it right there in our county with our students, and they go out and working with other youth groups and do projects for either churches or those who are in need and assistance. We partner with South Dakota. I told you about that. And we partner with the Alaska Baptist Resource Network. Our state has a partnership with the Alaska Baptist Convention, and we take teams up there to help do ministry because Alaska, less than 3% salvation up there. Now, here's where I'm going to walk you through, and I'll show you. Birmingham Cross Culturals is one of our newest partners, and that is a refugee center that one of our partner churches has gotten started in Birmingham, and it is basically, it walks refugees through for about 3 years to help them get established so that they are functional and sustainable in the U.S. after coming in as a refugee. Here's our unit. I'm trying to get through these because I want to talk about context, and we got about 25 minutes. That's our unit. It looks kind of interesting. That is a 37-foot gooseneck. The box is 28 feet. Come on, get back up there. There we go. It is 13 foot 6 inches tall, the highest legal limit you can have. We pull it with a ton and a half flatbed. And all of that was purchased with donations and grants for our ministry. We had a church that donated their property when they closed and said we wanted to go for the dental ministry. We sold it and paid off the dental unit. And then we had some other grants that came in, and we bought that 2024 1.5 ton. For some reason, come on now, work with me. Oh, there we go. This is us praying over it. We at one of our annual meetings afterwards, we went out and prayed over it. Just some more pictures of it set up. There's how we enter. The back folds down. Those doors open up. And then you go in. These are two of the dentists with me. Hey, I've got on the same shirt. How about that? These are two of our dentists that helped us get started. The one on the left, the gentleman, his name is Dr. Kevin Morris. He has taken his entire medical dental office with me to South Dakota next week. And there's another one of our dentists and one of his staff members serving alongside of us. That's at Birmingham Cross Culturals. More of our dental staff. The lady on the right, she is actually our truck manager. She is a retired dental hygienist instructor with one of the institutes in Birmingham. And then this is just it in operation. There they are sharing the gospel. Another one sharing the gospel. More operations on the inside. We have two operatories. We can do, and we do anything from basically simple extractions down. We have done surgical extractions in extreme cases, but that's only when the dentist is comfortable to do so. This lady here, look at that smile. Okay? This is a lady that was attending one of our church plants and found out about our dental ministry, and so she came. Here is, I want to read this to you. God is so good. This was her. She posted this on social media. Looking for a before picture of my teeth really hasn't let the weight of this settle. I haven't smiled with my teeth in over 2 years. Today, the free Shelby Baptist Mental Dentistry truly worked a miracle on my teeth. You really felt the love of Christ from every person at every moment while in their care. I can't thank the team of dentists and all the other staff enough for doing God's work here in this world. Even when my blood pressure was too high and was not allowed to be seen, I was given an opportunity to fellowship, meet some really amazing people, then rechecked my vitals, was able to go in. The devil couldn't hold these healing hands down. I can smile freely. A chain has been broken. Praise Jesus. Mental health and self-care are a real issue in the world that had a stronghold on me for years. The physical condition takes a toll after a while. It's more than in your head. Jesus made a way after so many years of trying to break out of a deep depression, going from hiding and shame to seeking help without fear. I've been blessed with this experience God has given me to shout at the top of every mountain. Our God is alive. Why would I keep that inside? Praise the Lord. See, that just gets me excited when we're able to see the life transformed. Now, very quickly, here's where we are. We've got to evaluate our current association's purpose of why we exist and value to the local church in the association. Because if we're not adding value, then we're not fulfilling our purpose. And if we're not adding value, why would they even want to be a part of the association? So we've got to find that. So how do we do that? Well, contextual needs. Each association is uniquely surrounded by a cluster of churches with a context very different than our own. Okay? Let's think about this. Excuse me. In your association, how many of your churches do you think sing hymns only?
Three.
Sir?
Three.
Okay.
About half.
Okay. What about this? How many use King James Version only?
Same three.
Same three? 90%. 90%? Okay. What about CSB?
Yeah.
New American Standard. 95 or 20? 20.
I think we got like one.
Yeah, but which one? 95 or the 2020 version?
Oh, I don't know that.
Okay. What about the ESV?
I got one.
Do you have any that use NIV? Here's my standard. If I'm going to preach at any one of our churches, here are my questions. Is there something you want me to address or avoid? Okay. Secondly, I ask, all right, what translation do you use? How long do you speak? How do you dress? What time do you want me there? Ask those questions. Why? Because every one of my churches, I've got a handful of churches that they would say, I don't care, Rick. Just come on and preach. Here's another question that why I ask, how do you dress? I've got, he's no longer there, but I had one pastor every Sunday, full suit and bow tie. And so when I went there, I better be dressed to the hilt. Okay? Other churches, hey, Rick, I don't care how you dress. They've got shorts on there. The guys do. Adults. You know? So each church, and my whole point is this, each church is different. We've got rural, suburban, urban, metro. So we have to look at it and say, what's going on? I've got one church, and I guarantee you, you probably have some as well. I've got one church that's running about 80 people, and they have 12 different Latino languages spoken in that Hispanic congregation. 12 different. I'm like, I asked him this question. I said, what's your greatest challenge? He said, making sure that I don't use a word that is offensive in one of the other languages than my own.
It's a caliente. That has more than one meaning.
Mm-hmm. You've got, I mean, and I'm like, wow, that just blows my mind. 80 people, 12 different ethnic languages of Spanish. That's crazy. So the landscape, the communities, the cities, the churches and people, they're all similar with needs, but they're very different and have a complex set. So here's what I want us to think about. While the gospel is sufficient for each context, the methodology to reach them is going to be unique. So what do we do? Okay? The greatest injustice, an AMS, DOM, whatever you want to call us. I even had one guy, I'm being recorded, I can't do that. All right, for his association is to hear a strategy for another association and try to cookie cutter it and implement it into his context. It doesn't work. You can't do it cookie cutter. You know what I found? Any of you remember a guy named Bill Hybels? Where was he pastoring? Do you remember?
Illinois.
Bloomington, Illinois. In that area, outside of Chicago, Willow Creek Community Church. They were seeker sensitive. Okay? People were flocking to them and Saddleback for their conferences to find out what was it that they were doing to draw so many people. So here's what he ended up doing. They were doing all this and they were going. By the way, if you don't know the story, Bill Hybels is, his whole world's a different thing. You need to find out all that. When I was working on my dissertation, I came across something. They made a statement. The church came back and said, we made a mistake. We were so focused on seeker sensitive that we failed to disciple the people.
Yeah, I read it.
Yep. So here's what I'm wanting you to draw out of this. How many people went up there, took what he was doing, went back to their churches, and immediately put it in there, and within a few weeks they were looking for a new job? Why? Rejection. You cannot cookie cutter something someone else is doing and just put it in. So what do we do? Here's what I want to encourage you. We need to look, and I thought I'd put it on there. Find community and contextual needs. How do you do that? Here's how you do it. You start talking to people and listening. Who do you talk to? Fire chief. The police chief. Superintendent of schools. The mayor. School, any school. ER departments. Hospitals. Community agencies. You're going in there and you're listening to them and saying, hey, what are the greatest needs in this area that are not being met? Here's how we found ours about the dental unit. There had been a vision for the dental ministry at Shelby Baptist for almost 30 years when I went there. They even had enough equipment to stock about two or three dental offices upstairs stockpiled. And I came there and I was like, why aren't we doing something? I had the experience, I was driving one of NAM's, the NAM units, either for the serve tours, taking them to South Dakota or different places, to driving the medical and the dental. And so I had that experience. And I said, why are we looking at building a brick and mortar place and asking everyone to come to us when Jesus said, go? We want to set it up at the church. And we want it to draw people to the church to get the need met, and then the church have the connection with the people in the community. But we're like, is there a need for a dental ministry in Shelby County, the most affluent county in the state of Alabama? So we did a little research. And here are some of the high needs that say, yes, you need a dental ministry or a free dental clinic. One is, if the state does not offer dental care for adults outside in Medicaid. Okay? Medicaid. They offer it for children, but Alabama is one of three states that does not offer it for adults.
North Carolina doesn't either.
Okay? So you're there as well. So, check number one. Okay? There's that need. Number two was, is there mass transit in your area? Shelby County has zero mass transit. So we're like, there's check number two. We started looking around. We said, wait a minute. Are there any free dental clinics in Shelby County that people could go to? There was one. And no one could go to it except one group of people. That was the prisoners. It was at the jail. The jail prisoners got free dental care. But the citizens didn't. So we said, there we go, three of them, right there. That need is not being met in our county. It's something we have the opportunity to do it. So now, I've got about, I was supposed to let out at 4:15, take a break at 4:15. I got about 9 minutes. I want to cover this next area, the final one, strategic and financial partnerships. How's your budget? Would you or any of you say, you know what, money's not a problem for us? Come on now, don't be shy. Speak up. If it's not a problem for you, don't be shy there. How about you, Jason? Are y'all got all the money y'all need?
We're healthy at the moment.
Healthy at the moment.
Yeah. Struggled a little bit in the past, but in an okay place.
Okay. One of the ongoing challenges is the fact that most of the time we are reliant on the churches giving to the association. Okay? And if they get upset, they pull their funding. Things going well, they believe in what's going on, they'll support it. But sometimes we want to meet a need and help the church, and we don't want the church to have to pay for that. So we find a way to do it, like our dental ministry. Our churches pay nothing for us to come set up at their church. Patients pay nothing to get any service done. You're like, and I know what you're thinking. It costs for the Florida Baptist Convention. It costs for the North Carolina Baptist Convention. We know the models. We charge for anyone outside of our network. For instance, if we're going somewhere else in Alabama, and we can only go in Alabama because that's where we are licensed for, we charge just like North Carolina and Florida. But for our county, for our churches that are in our network, they pay nothing. Because I can be at any one of our churches in 45 minutes. Set it up, and that's great. You're like, well, how do you do it? How do you pay for it? Because that unit that y'all saw right there, the truck alone was over $100,000. Okay? The dental unit before it was stocked with all the hand pieces, the Nomad, which is the takes the x-rays, the hydrosonic and the autoclave and all that stuff, before any of that was $200,000. So how do we do it? Well, here are our funding mechanism options. Strategically aligned business partners and wealthy investors, donors, and other associations that we have partnerships with. For instance, we have a shower unit. Another association had one they were not using, and I told, and they didn't want to get rid of it. I said, I tell you what I'll do. I said, we'll pay for half the maintenance. We'll give you a year out, our schedule of when we need to use it, and that way it's going to be used. We'll help you maintain it, and y'all can still have access and use it and keep it at your place. They said, let's do it. Investors and donors, we have a former church planter that he and his wife started a business online selling bamboo sheets. He now squeaks by on gross revenue sales of $15 million a year. He and some of his buddies are modeling what Hobby Lobby does. Hobby Lobby will go out and buy a piece of property for multi-million dollars. They will buy it on pennies on the dollar. They will keep it for a period of time and maybe lease it out or something, but then they will donate it after that period of time to an organization. They tried to donate a piece of property to us at the North American Mission Board, and we said, nah, we're not in that. They're wanting to buy any of our churches that close for about 25% value, give that money to the Association for Church Planning Fund, lease it back to a church plant for whatever the insurance and utilities are for the month, then at the end of the year, they donate it to the church. $50,000 for us, we'll take 10% of that and put it in a fund for that church to use for repairs. So that's one way we're doing it. Other ways are grants. I think that's the next one. Non-gospel prohibitive. In other words, they're not going to say, you cannot share the gospel. We will not accept those. Right now, we have gotten one grant from the Baptist Health Foundation, which is the Baptist hospitals that was just partnered and bought a partnership by Orlando Health, which is another nonprofit. Faith-based, and they have, the Baptist Health Foundation has a community investment grants that they will give. I think last year we got our $35,000 from them. The Shelby County Community Health Foundation, we had a hospital that sold, was a Baptist hospital, and it said that all the funds go for health care advancement in Shelby County. So we're able to apply for that. Last year we got $50,000. This year we got $35,000. I applied for a grant and met with the folks this week that we're looking at. It's the Lilly Foundation, if you've ever heard of them. And it's a grant that's given to Samford University Church and Community Resource, I think is what it is, and Congregational Resource, that's what it is. And we're looking at probably around a $100,000 grant for the next 3 years. So that's, and none of them will come in here and say, you cannot share the gospel, okay? We have a thrift store. Let me mention that real quickly. It started out just as selling once a year around Christmas odds and ends that were brought in to help with our benevolence ministry. And it has morphed over that of the last probably 20 years, 20 plus years, from that to open 6 days a week. It occupies an old Winn-Dixie grocery store. We've got 44,000 square feet, 24,000 of that sell space. This year, we're on target to gross revenue be about $1.6 million. In that gross revenue of $1.6 million, roughly 25 to 30% of that goes straight back into ministry. That's after overhead of everything. And I can't explain it. Every year I've been there, and I look back before, it's just every year in revenue increase. Every year. Every year. We'll bring in anywhere from $5,500 to $6,500 a day. And how do we do it? We not only sell products in the store, we sell products online. We sell products that come in that are not sellable, that are clothing items. We put them together and we sell them in bulk. We'll get about $60,000 to $80,000 a year just in selling that kind of stuff. We'll take scrap metal, sell it, get the funds from that. So everything that we can, we're doing and selling back. And it's just free stuff that's given in. People come by and drop it off all the time, every day. So, it's 4:14. Man, I am so sorry. I feel like I didn't leave you guys time to questions, comments, cuss words, sign remarks, any of that. Let me have it.
When it comes to the dental, how do you promote that or advertise?
Here's the funny thing. We don't have to much. Let's say that, in fact, we're going to be set up next week at one of our churches in one of our university areas. We'll put it out on social media about 2 weeks in advance. And then all of a sudden, our office is flooded with phone calls. We'll set up appointments, and then we'll have a wait list, and we will take, we know how many we can see in one day. We know about how many won't show up, so we'll have the call list, and we'll tell half of them, we need you here at 8 o'clock. We'll start seeing patients at 8:30. That group will go until noon, and they'll get taken care of. We'll say to the next group, you need to be here at 12 o'clock. The staff will take a break for lunch while we're processing them and take them, and we'll wrap up about 5 o'clock. But we don't ever have a problem with advertising.
Our biggest problem is finding dentists that will help you.
Yep. We have done several things. One is, that's the biggest holdup, is when we finding a dentist. I know with North Carolina, the church is responsible for finding their own dentist. We take care of it for ours. In our churches, our association, we provide the dental staff. We've got a list of partner dentists that work with us and hygienists, and we book them before we will finalize a booking for a church. Then there's times when we'll do a dentist and we'll say, we need a dentist for half a day, and we'll get that one for this half and another one for the later half. We've been working on a partnership with UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham School of Dentistry, and the people there want it to happen, but the bureaucracy of getting it through the boards and everything has been a nightmare. So that's kind of how we do that. Also find dentists that are retired, if they've got their license. We also, but they don't have the insurance, we work and do a coverage so their insurance will be covered, and we take care of that. So,
I don't know, the North Carolina, like you said, it's not free, but it's not astronomical. Chrissy, she works, like, Will was partnered with another church.
Yeah.
And they'll take it on Friday, we'll take it on Saturday, we'll split the mileage.
Yep.
That type of thing.
Chrissy's great to work with and make it happen.
It cost us about $700 a day.
Yeah. It takes us, cost-wise, per client, per patient, in materials of just stuff on the inside of the truck, about $10 per person. Then you've got so much fuel for the generator, then so much fuel to get there with the diesel. And generally, because in the county, we don't stay overnight. We back at our own house.
Well, that cost us a couple $100.
Yeah.
It's always, it's a tourist area. You don't get cheap lodging.
Yeah, well, we stay at our own places because I can be at any one of our churches in 45 minutes from my house.
Make sure your QR code.
Oh, yes. Hey, guys, thank you for coming. There you go.